All right, it's the summer of 1982. I'm just about to turn 19 years old. And up to that point in my life, most of the adventures I'd had, I got through books. I could go anywhere, I could meet anyone, I could do anything. But this summer, it was going to be different. My sister Bethany and I had saved our money, and we were going to Ireland. We were going to stay with friends she'd made the summer before when she was an exchange student. To prepare for the trip, I read Trinity by Leon Uris, so I was up on my Irish history. And I had followed Irish politics in the news quite avidly. If some of you might remember, in 1981, Bobby Sands, a political prisoner held in Belfast, had begun a hunger strike, and subsequently he and 10 other political prisoners starved themselves to death. There was a lot of violence in Ireland at the time, and the political climate was very charged. And we were told not to talk politics with anyone we didn't know, which made it all the more intriguing and exciting to me. So on a hot, humid Friday night in July, we left. And we arrived on a very atypical, warm, beautiful, sunny day at Shannon Airport. As soon as I stepped off the plane, I was completely overwhelmed with emotion. It was as if I finally reached the place I was supposed to be. I was home. I belonged. It was like all my Irish ancestors were there to greet me, saying, "Welcome, and what took you so long?" From Shannon, we went to Limerick, the train station, where we were greeted by a really large white sign with big, bold black letters that said, "Sex is illegal." Bethany and I laughed, we took a few pictures, and I was wondering if somehow my mother was sending us a message from 5,000 miles away about how we were supposed to behave. We headed on to Dublin anyway, and were greeted by the Stanleys, Kay and her children, Fiona, who was my age, and Ian, a year younger. They had red hair and freckles and blue eyes. They walked right out of an Irish fairy tale. They whisked us off to their house at 11 Woodstock Gardens, Ranelagh, Dublin. It was a three-story red brick row home and our home for the next few weeks. The first night we spent at dinner drinking two bottles of wine and then at the pub with Tony Stanley, a gruff Irishman with a heavy brogue who drank Boilermakers and cussed constantly. Fiona, Ian, Bethany, and I planned our next adventure, which was to meet up with their friends, Joe Cavanaugh and Brian Lynch, who are returning from an impromptu holiday in London. How cool. So the next night, we all got together. At that time, the alternative music scene was really in Ireland. It was the Jam, the Clash, Madness, and there were mods and punks. And mods were like dressed like the Beatles in the early days, or just the skinny jeans that are really in now and the V-neck sweaters. Well, Brian and Joe were mods and really cool. So we went and headed off with our Guinness and our boombox to the local convent, where we climbed the wall and we went to a remote corner and listened to the new bootleg cassette tapes that Brian and Joe had brought back from London, music not heard yet in the United States, a band called Duran Duran. It was really cool. And as I was sitting there smoking, drinking, and staring at Brian Lynch with his creamy Irish complexion and those rosy cheeks and blue eyes and this lilting Irish accent that completely drew me in, I was mesmerized. And I was pretty sure he was too. But the party wasn't going to last that long because the Irish police came along and said convents weren't really the place to party and perhaps we should find someplace else. The rule follower and me had known this all along. We headed off to the Stanleys' living room where we put on the Beatles' Red Isle album, which was kind of our anthem album, if you will, and talked through the night. And Brian and I realized, not after too much longer, that the attraction was mutual. And we kind of fell madly in love. His gentle sweetness pushed me out of that rule-following comfort zone. And we swam in a watering hole in the middle of a field somewhere, and I'm pretty sure we weren't supposed to be doing that either. And we camped on the beach at British Bay, and one evening he played lifeguard while I swam in the Irish Sea after a few too many drinks at the pub. And the next day he gently washed my hair in the pump in the middle of the village town because I had complained about it a lot. And we took a long bus ride to Slane Castle where we saw a huge concert, the Chieftains, Jay Giles, George Thorogood, and the Rolling Stones. And if I close my eyes, I can see him standing there next to me, singing Going to a Go-Go, just slightly off key, with his beautiful face lit up, completely electric. Not long thereafter, we were in the Stanley's pale blue living room and put on the Blue Album, one of my favorites. And he started singing something into my ear softly and declared it to be our song. We began planning how I could stay in Ireland. I could just stay there. It was easy. I would work at his family store. I would stay at the Stanley's, and that visa stuff, we just get that figured out. It wasn't really a big deal. And then I would be living out this dream. I would be the poet or the writer living with this great Irishman who sang me songs and loved me. But after a while, the rule follower in me started to come out, and I started thinking, maybe I should go home and sell my car and save some money, and then I'll come back. And after a lot of tears and a lot of conversation, we decided that was probably the best route to go. That way I could come back with nothing hanging over my head. And so we had a big party the night before we left. Brian played Ticket to Ride at least 1,000 times before I was gone, and I headed back to Baltimore. That was 28 years ago, and I didn't know then that my last summer free of responsibility, and the last summer that I would actually ever spend in Ireland. About when I got home, we wrote letters, we called, we sent cassette tapes of one-sided conversations so we could hear each other's voices. And then one day, about 6 months after I returned home, Brian called me. And he told me that he'd been diagnosed with cancer. It was a melanoma. I hadn't heard of that at the time, and I reassured him, you're going to be fine, you'll get better, and why don't you try to come here? We have Hopkins, and they do everything here. But he had a family, and they were probably happy with what was happening there, and he stayed on in Ireland. And sadly, he didn't win that battle, and he died. And I was always left wondering, what if I had jumped? What if I had stayed and not come home? But now, when I hear something play on the radio, I kind of feel good, because it takes me back to the summer when I was 19 in the pale blue living room of the Stanley's house. And I keep a picture of Brian on my wall, and he's wearing his navy sweater and white t-shirt and skinny jeans, and he's smiling at me, looking at me with those blue, blue eyes, and he's kind of frozen in time, forever young. And I remember this magical summer in a land far, far away, in a place where I belonged and I was loved.